The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. Today's episode covers anti-racism, one of my favorite subjects to cover here on the podcast. And although I consider myself an anti-racist and agree with the anti-racist agenda, I am by no means perfect and have admittedly failed my black friends and family members on numerous occasions. And one day soon, I'll probably sit down and devote an entire episode to those failures. But today, it's all about my guest, comedian W. Kamau Bell. If you're already familiar with him, you know what to expect. If not, definitely get familiar because his projects are eye-opening, including the book he's here to promote today. So get ready to get schooled in anti-racism by one of the best, W. Kamau Bell. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Pull up, get it. Live.
Yeah, what's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolo White Podcast.
Episode 81 now of the Dolo White Podcast. Super excited to have my guest today, W. Kamau Bell. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm sure you hear it all the time. That's an incredible name.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I came up with it when I was 18, and here I am, you know, 26 years later. And
it still works.
All right. So the new book is Do the Work. First of all, I want to say you did a fantastic job with the Cosby Doc. I thought that was incredible what you did there.
Thank you.
But the new book is, I looked over this for about an hour this morning, and it's incredible. It's an anti-racist activity book that you wrote with Kate Schatz. I hope I said her last name right.
Schatz, like shots fired.
Yes, Kate Schatz. And it really felt welcoming. As somebody that's a white kid that grew up in the South and has family members who desperately need to read this book, it felt friendly, which I think is always a good start when having these conversations. So tell us a bit, like, where did the idea of an activity book come from?
So, you know, this book came, you know, I don't know if you remember the year 2020. It was about 17 years ago, 2020. Right. It was the beginning of COVID when a lot of us were in lockdown and we were stuck watching the news, trying to figure out what this COVID thing was, washing our groceries as they came into the house, watching the COVID counts go up on the news. And on May 25th, 2020, the news said, wait, we have something that you need to see that's maybe more significant than the COVID counts right now. And it was the murder of George Floyd by cops in Minneapolis. And out of that, a lot of people for the first time actually watched one of those videos. Like people like me, black folks, people who are in anti-racism. We've seen lots of those videos. But for a lot of people, white people, they had never actually watched one of those videos before, even if they thought they had. And so they were really taken over by that video. And so it led to a lot of anti-racist books going to the top of the New York Times bestseller list, led to a lot of white people going out into marches in the streets. It was called The Racial Reckoning. And me and Kate were, my co-author were aware, and we were already doing this anti-racism work, that a lot of people were going to buy those books. They weren't all going to read those books. And even after they read those great books, they weren't necessarily going to know what to do next. And at the same time this was happening, our kids were not in school yet again because of the lockdowns. And so we were giving them these Brain Quest books, which are these books that help kids keep their brains from turning to mush when they're not at school. And we were like, we need to write an anti-racist Brain Quest. We need like Highlights Magazine, but for anti-racism. So as a way to sort of like approach it in a way that feels fun. I don't know if we can swear on this, but it feels fun, but it's not fucking around.
Yeah.
So it is. That was our motto for the book. Funny, but not fucking around. As I say, as a stand-up comedian, I tell jokes, but I'm not kidding. So it's that same. That's that same way of thinking about things.
And I love the way it started. I think one of the first things that you guys mentioned in the book is that we are all sitting here on stolen land, which when you bring that up to certain white people with certain views, they get defensive. And I'm like, bro, like you weren't there.
Because they feel like you're about to take their property. And the idea being is that you have to recognize that this country was started on two huge war crimes: the genocide of Native Americans, the stealing of the land, which also involved the stealing of their land, and the transatlantic slave trade. And much of the wealth that white people hold in this country comes directly from that, because much of the land that they stole from Native Americans, a lot of those white people still own. And as that property has gotten more wealth, they've been able to acquire more wealth. Much of the many major corporations can trace their origins to owning enslaved Africans. Or the fact is that you can start as a white person, you can start a corporation, you know, in the 90s that is just to sell books, and you can turn that into a multi-billion, maybe trillion-dollar corporation. And people who work in your warehouses, many of whom are Black, Brown, and Indigenous, aren't earning a living wage and are being overworked and not treated well, built on the back of your so-called billionaire status. So even though, and we will look at you as a success story and not pay attention to the people who are working under you who are not being paid a living wage.
And also, I hear this a lot from white people, is like, white privilege isn't, it doesn't affect my life at all. I grew up poor. I did this, I did that, and I worked hard and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but maybe you're riding down the street one day and you didn't get pulled over and you had, you know, weed on you and you didn't get pulled over because you're white. You don't know.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. A lot of those January 6th white people who stormed the Capitol maybe were unemployed. Let's say none of them had jobs. But you know what most of them got to do? They got to go home after storming the Capitol. They got to get back in their cars and go home and high five their friends after they had just committed federal crimes. And we all know that if that had been quote unquote Black Lives Matters and Black folks had stormed the Capitol, that would have been a mass murder situation. People would have died in the streets that day. So even if you have nothing as a white person, the fact that you can be, you know, one of the things we have on our Check Your Privilege page is, have you ever yelled at a cop and gotten away with it? And I know a lot of white women out there tell police officers, you can't tell me what to do. And they get to go home to their families at the end of that. So there's lots of ways to look at privilege as a white person that is just are you Elon Musk or not?
Yeah. I remember in high school, you know, we were sitting at a playground drinking beer at one point, and the police pulled up and they let us all go. Yep. And, you know, I look back at that, you know, 20 years later, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, that probably doesn't happen if we were a group of Black kids there.
I remember we did a show, an episode of United Shades at San Quentin Prison. And there was a point in California where they had this three strikes rule where if you committed three felonies, you would be served to life in prison. And so the idea being, and you would talk to some people, I think it was a Latino man I talked to, who his third strike was shooting a gun in the air. Now that's bad. Don't shoot a gun in the air. You don't know where the bullet's going to land, right? Don't shoot a gun in the air. But we also know that after high school football games all around the country, that there are white kids going pop, 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 pop as a way to celebrate their winning team. And they are not being then sent to jail for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. You have a page in the book that is like, I think it's, it's white people's greatest hits or something like that, where you show like, well, I wasn't a slave owner. And then, you know, you react to that. I absolutely love that page. I think you should make that a T-shirt. And let people wear it. So in the book, it's very interactive. You ask people to take, I believe it was the Alabama
literacy test.
Yes.
Was a test that was given to Black folks in Alabama as a way to prove if they could read well enough to vote. As if that's something you should have to do, because maybe you shouldn't vote because you can't. And it was written in such a way, not just read, because it's actually a test. So it's asking you about, it's like a test on government. Like if a senator dies in office, who do they appoint to the da 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 da? As if any of us know these things. And right. The way we set it up in the book is we give you a bunch of questions from the test just to show to, and so you can take like, why am I taking this? These questions are hard. And then go, now imagine it's 1950 and you're a Black person in Alabama, and this is the only way you can vote is if you pass this test. That's structural racism.
And the wild thing is it's a literary test. So if you can read the question and answer the question, that should prove that you're literate.
Yes.
Whether you get the question right or not.
Whether you get the question right or wrong, you shouldn't even be it. And also, since when have we since who gets to decide who's literate or not or good enough to vote is the question. The basic problem is, why if I showed up to vote and I'm legally allowed to vote, let me do it the way I want to do it. Maybe because a lot of people vote for a lot of things without knowing what's going on, and they can read.
Yeah, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and I grew up in Georgia, and both of them are very. Georgia's becoming slowly blue, but both of them are red states for the most part. And so you hear the topic of, and they're all passing laws, anti-CRT stuff. Basically, even though CRT, we all know, is not something you're going to learn in grade school, regardless.
Unless you're a prodigy. If your kid's learning CRT in grade school, congratulations. You have, your kid is the legal version of Doogie Howser.
Yes, exactly. But I feel like your book here is what they're trying to keep people from learning when they use keys like CRT. This is honestly what I want my kid to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know it's for adults, but this should be at least in high schools, I would think.
I mean, you know, I think we always sort of want to sort of get it to the kids, but I think we have to understand that first we got to start with us.
Yeah.
Because the thing that is actually even more helpful is, like, yes, I think there's many activities that could be taken out of this book and used in schools around the country. They're swearing in it. We wanted to be able to write it for an adult audience. We actually are working on a kid version of the book that's going to be substantially different in that it won't be a workbook, because we want it to be able to go into libraries, and you can't put workbooks in libraries. Mm-hmm. So the idea being that, like, we do want to make a version for kids, but, like, if you as an adult do the work of this book, then your conversations with your kid will automatically get better, and you won't have to assign your kid homework from the book. You'll just be able to talk to your kid about this in a more smart and informed way. So when your kid comes home from school and says, did you know that some slaves were happy being slaves, that they actually enjoyed it, getting three meals a day? And that actually, we don't call it slavery anymore. We call it involuntary relocation, which is what somebody in Texas is promoting, calling it involuntary relocation. But you can say to your kid, whoa. I read this book called Do the Work, and this is what the real spill is on all that.
I always say, and I've had plenty of anti-racist episodes of this, and I always say that as a white person who's learned a lot and been on an anti-racist journey for a long time, that the best thing, the best decision I made is to, the first step is always to listen. Actually, yeah. Listen. Don't judge, just listen to what your Black friends and family members are telling you. Now, if you don't have Black friends and family members, there's something
now you're learning about yourself. If you don't have multiple friends who are not your same race as you as a white person, then you've learned something about yourself. So you're not really, if you can't even find those people to be your friends, then you're learning something about yourself. And I would say that, like, I always quote, as a dad, I spend a lot of time watching a lot of kids TV. I always quote the wise sage Daniel Tiger from PBS saying, I'm sorry is the first step. Then how can I help? Exactly. And I think a lot of times with white folks, they don't want to get to the how can I help part. They just want to be like, well, I'm sorry for racism. Okay, I said it. But it's actually like, no. Now, can you help? Can you use some of your privilege to help your community become less racist?
I noticed one of the themes in the book was speaking up in moments of racism. And that's something that, as a white person that grew up in the South with a white family and have many family members who think the complete opposite of the way I do, the mistake that I've made too many times over is that, oh, that's just the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, at the very least, saying, hey, what you just said was racist. Mm-hmm. This is 1, 2, and 3. These are the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
And don't say that around me anymore. Don't.
Yeah.
And using my voice is something I've been working on in therapy for a long time.
Yeah.
Regardless of the situation, but especially in this situation, which I feel like I've personally failed my wife, my friends, and other family members that I have. But is that basically, I feel like it's the very least we can do as white people, but
it's the start of improving the world is improving your own society, improving your own circle. We have a situation that we have a thing in the book called Know Your Lane, because people say stay in your lane. Well, okay, if I'm gonna stay in my lane, I'm at least know what my lane is and what I can do in my lane. And so, for example, and also we have things in the book where you can grab a friend and rehearse these awkward situations, because you're not going to think of the right thing to say on the spot the first time it happens. So actually, we have a thing where it's like you can actually play act with a friend. With who your friend can act as your racist uncle. So you can actually start. It's no different than, like, I took martial arts for years. You got to practice the kicks and punches before you can actually put them into effect in a real self-defense situation. It's not just going to magically, the knowledge is not just going to magically pass down to you. It's the same thing with this. You actually have to think about these things. And also, the first time you do it is not going to be, you're not going to be as easy to interrupt it as the second time you do it. And the third time you do it, the more you do it, the better you'll get at it. It's the same thing we teach kids, but somehow as adults, we forget that you have to practice how to do the right thing.
Yeah. And I think I had somebody on one time and she said, you don't have to have your words don't have to be perfect.
Mm-mm.
Just do your best in the moment. Just
do your best. And I think the more you do your best, the better you'll get it. Do it your best. You'll raise your personal level of what your best is. I always compare it to, like, exercising. Like, if you only exercise once a year, it's not going to be worth a damn. If you exercise regularly and then the more you exercise, the more you'll be like, oh, I can do more when I'm exercising, the more healthy you will be. So I think it's the same thing with this. The more you engage and practice anti-racism, the better you'll be at being an anti-racist.
All right. My last question before I let you out of here. I know you're probably doing a million of these today. Best advice for white people if they want to make a change.
Don't get afraid of what if I make a mistake. Mm. Get involved in what do I do when I make a mistake. So don't let the fear of making a mistake stop you from getting involved in anti-racist work. Actually understand that, oh, you'll definitely make a mistake.
Yes.
The recovery is what's important from the mistake. So again, it's not about what if I make a mistake. No, no, no. It's when you make a mistake, how do you recover from it?
I always tell white people when you do make those mistakes, which I've made plenty of times, it's always better to be humble than defensive and just say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. If you feel like explaining it to me, explain it to me. If not.
Yeah, exactly. Saying I'm sorry is the first step. Then how can I help? So if you make a mistake, say I'm sorry. And then let the person know I'm willing to repair the damage. I'm willing to make reparations. How do you suggest that I go about doing that?
I love it. The book is Do the Work. Everybody should get it, but especially if you're white. You should get it. You should buy one for all of your family members, regardless of where they are.
Your summer book reading club, your summer book club.
Yes, absolutely. W. Kamal Bell, man, thank you so much for doing this. I hope I can have you back on again someday and talk to you for a much longer period of time because I'd love to pick your brain.
Thank you.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other, Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, W. Kamal Bell, man. All of his projects are amazing. I normally give out the guest Instagram or Twitter info. Today, I just want to tell you, Google W. Kamal Bell and then go back and watch everything he's ever done because it's all eye-opening and amazing. Shout out to W. Kamal Bell for being on. Make sure you're following me on the gram, though, at DoloWhite101, DoleWhite101. Also, whatever platform you're currently listening to this podcast on, make sure you subscribe to it. Make sure you're following the podcast. If it lets you rate and review, do that. 5 stars and some positive comments are definitely appreciated, so thank you for that. Back with a brand new episode next Wednesday morning. My guest will be Maya Payne Smart. She's coming on to talk about early childhood literacy, something we should be talking more about after doing that episode. So definitely tap in with me next Wednesday morning. That's it. I'm going. I'm out. Appreciate you listening.